Are the nameplate still right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Still that way, so. Right, good morning and welcome. It is roughly 10 a.m., January 12, 2011. This is the regular biweekly meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission and the biennial reorganizational meeting of the Public Service Commission. So the first order of business of today's meeting will be reorganization. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk. So first order of business, as I said, is reorganization. It is the election of the chairman. A motion, and then a motion will be made to assign portfolios.
Commissioners, nominations are in order for the chairman of the commission.
I move that Commissioner Clark serve as chairman of the Public Service Commission for the next 2 years.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries.
Thank you. I thank my fellow commissioners for the trust placed in me, although there's a little hesitation there, I noticed on
the
second. Yeah.
I couldn't have done it without a script.
Much quicker than
that. Who wrote this, by the way?
That's why we have it. I think this was written by probably John Milkey or Janet Elkin back in the day. Just been using it ever since. I move the commission portfolios for the next 2 years be allocated as follows. Commissioner Clark, administration, electric generation and transmission, licensing, grain and auctioneers, railroads, and weights and measures. Commissioner Kalk, gas and electric utilities, distribution utilities, telecommunications and pipeline safety. Commissioner Kramer, information technology, mining and pipelines.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. And that concludes the reorganization of the commission. We're now ready to proceed to the regular portion of the agenda. Remember how this was printed up? I think it was probably printed up, Kevin, with yours first.
Is that no. Right?
No, it is actually printed
okay.
up with mine first. Okay. So we'll the TC1.
We do have a consent.
Oh, that's right. Is there? There is.
I move passage.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Moving to TC1. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE 11-16 granting the request of Columbia Grain International, Inc., Portland, Oregon, to discontinue business as a facilities-based grain buyer at Arvilla, Larimore, Crystal, Valley City, Oaks, and Crete, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Arvilla, Larimore, Crystal, Valley City, Oaks, and Crete, North Dakota is discontinued.
Second.
These are some sizable elevators, but don't get worried. They're going to be back in business here in a minute.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
TC2, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE 11-14 granting the request of Columbia Grain, Inc., Portland, Oregon, to operate as a facilities-based grain buyer at Arvilla, Larimore, Crystal, Valley City, Oaks, and Crete, North Dakota.
Second.
This really is just a reorganization of Columbia Grain. They're now Columbia Grain, Inc., as opposed to Columbia Grain International, Inc., which merged into Columbia Grain, Inc., so it's a matter of paperwork, really.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC3, I move the commission adopt the order granting certificates of public convenience and necessity to Otter Tail Power Company and Northern States Power Company to construct and operate the North Dakota segment of a proposed 345 kV electric transmission line from Monticello, Minnesota, to a new Bison substation to be constructed in Cass County, North Dakota. Case numbers PU-10-606 and PU-10-607.
Second.
This may sound somewhat familiar, and it should, because this was the subject of a previously issued advance determination of prudence that the commission made with regard to the what's known as one of the CapEx 2020 projects. This is one that is a reliability line primarily, and is to support the electrical grid in the Red River Valley, which is in need of this reliability boost. The line itself runs from the Fargo area down towards Monticello, Minnesota. The wording of both the motion and the order, you might notice, is a little bit vague. The reason for that is because the actual route of the line, where it's going to be entering North Dakota and where the actual substation will be, is yet to be determined. That will be the subject of a separate siting application, And that may be the portion of this package of cases that is of the greatest interest to the general public. We have received a fair amount of correspondence from the city of Fargo and leaders within the Fargo area. With the flood diversion project going in, there's a strong desire and an understandable desire to make sure that where this substation goes, where the transmission line goes, is coordinated closely with the flood diversion projects in the Fargo area. So I'm sure that we'll continue to hear about that in the course of that particular siting application.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And item TC4, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon filing an application in case number PU-10-668, South Hart Energy Development, LLC's proposed 175-megawatt integrated gasification combined cycle electric power generating facility in Starks County, North Dakota.
Second.
This is really a refinement of what has previously been given the commission in the South Hart Energy cases. As you may recall, a couple of years ago, actually almost 2 years exactly, Great Northern Project Development, on behalf of South Hart Coal, had notified the commission that it was planning to construct and operate a coal to synthetic natural gas production facility on the same site. The letter that they have provided here is updating and revising that particular application. Now what South Hart Energy is proposing to build is instead a project that would turn North Dakota lignite into gas and then would use that gas in a 175-megawatt combined cycle electric generation plant. So it's a significantly different project. The current estimated cost of the construction of the facility is $2.2 billion, so this is a sizable investment. And as far as a schedule that they've indicated to us, they don't have a definitive project development schedule as of the writing. However, South Hart Energy does not anticipate commencement of construction before July of 2013. They indicate in their letter that the electricity from the facility would be designed to supply the regional electric needs of the Upper Midwest.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio, Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. KC1. I move the commission issue a notice of hearing for the formal hearing that has been requested on the decision to approve bond release number 7 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-8106 held by BNI Coal LTD for the Center Mine.
Second.
We had approved the bond this bond release on November 24th of last year on 195 acres of reclaimed land at the Center Mine. But before, of course, the bond release becomes effective, any person or party with an interest that is or thinks they may be adversely affected, they have 30 days to request a formal hearing in the matter. And Jeff Ranke of Center did, in fact, do that. He requested a formal hearing on December 24th of last year. His concerns relate to the need for replacing some pre-mine water sources that existed prior to mining. Normally, we're required to hold a formal hearing within 30 days of receiving the request. However, in this case, both parties, both the mining company and Mr. Ranke, have waived that right, and the hearing is scheduled as part of this order for 1:30 p.m. on February 11th in the commission hearing room, and date and time that is acceptable to both parties. Law Judge Alan Holberg from the Office of Administrative Hearings will serve as a substantive hearing officer for that hearing.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. KC2. I move the commission approve revision number 8 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-0201 held by Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to extend mining onto some of the federal coal tracts within the existing permit area and to update other information and mining and reclamation plans in the permit.
Second.
We received Coteau's application for this revision in March of last year. The primary changes, as the motion states, extend mining onto the most of the federal coal tracts that are located south of County Road 26. BLM issued the company these tracts, or issued a permit for these federal tracks in 2006, and the Reclamation Division has completed their review and recommends it be approved. The primary purpose, as I said, is to extend onto federally owned coal. Now, there are about, well, I think about 5,300, if I remember right. A little over 5,300 acres of this originally 17,000-plus acre permit. The federal tracks were part of the initial permit back in 2003, but, of course, the federal lease was not yet in place and obviously has been since 2006, so now they're ready to move into most of the federal land. So that's the purpose of the revision. Everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
KC3, I move the commission acknowledge that surface coal mining permit application SHSH1001 filed by South Hart Coal LLC has been deemed complete by staff and issue notices for receipt of this permit application.
Second.
Toward the end of March of last year, South Hart filed the application for the surface coal mining permit on a 4,581 acres near South Hart, North Dakota. The Reclamation Division, in working with the application, sent a couple of letters back asking for updates and improvements on the application. The most recent one was on November 24th of last year. South Hart responded to the second completeness deficiency letter on December 29th of last year, and the staff has now determined that the application is, in fact, complete. Once a permit application is deemed complete, the applicant then has to publish notices once a week for four consecutive weeks in the official county newspaper in the county where the proposed mine is located, and then in daily newspapers of general circulation in the area. In this particular case, it is believed, at least, that the Dickinson Press serves both of those responsibilities. They are both, while they're not quite a daily newspaper, they print 6 out of the 7 days. They are also the official county newspaper. Now, in discussions with staff earlier, I suggest that we would include the Bismarck Tribune on those notices to make sure that we have the 7 days covered. And obviously, this is a mine with a great deal of public interest. Any person, let me just back up a little bit. Anyway, once the last notice has been published, any person that has an objection or wants to file comments or wants to make a request for an informal conference on the application has 30 days to do that. The Reclamation Division will also send notices to all the surface owners, of course, by certified mail in the proposed permit area and the government agencies and officials that would be affected. I wanted to explain a little bit the process because it is considerably different, or at least different enough that it can be confusing to the way we would normally site some infrastructure, which we've become quite accustomed to. The informal conference that is requested, that may be requested, and I would anticipate would be requested in this particular case, it would be presided over by someone. That informal conference is not an evidentiary hearing. It is more of a public input meeting. However, it is presided over by someone, and that someone cannot be the same body or person or entity that ultimately decides the permit if in fact there is a finding and a recommendation. But rather, that person, along with the reclamation staff, would make its findings and its recommendation to, in this case, the commission. And then the commission would, let's presume for a moment, at least for the sake of illustration, issue the permit, after which then parties would have an opportunity to appeal that decision. Up until that time, the parties would not have the opportunity to provide evidence to the commission in any formal process. But rather in the appeal process, it would then have that opportunity. The reason I'm not at this point presuming that the commission wouldn't be that initial body would be because we're still wrestling with how best to accommodate what is clearly public interest and to ensure that that the public has the opportunity to participate as openly and as transparently as we've again become accustomed to in other processes. So the bottom line is that the same entity cannot conduct the informal conferences as makes the final decision prior to appeal. And whether we can flip-flop those roles or not is so far uncertain, but we'll be having those discussions as we move forward.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kalki didn't have any. Do you have an announcement or two you want to make?
I could make a comment. Actually, I was when Commissioner Clark was talking about that transmission line, we're talking about the potential impact of flood projects in that line. One of the things of concern as we go forward is the timing of the flood project final solution, if you will, and the development of that line. So that's going to be interesting to watch that play out. But that's the only comment I would have other than it's good to thank you for your service in the commission. And congratulations to Tony in his new position.
Thank you. And thanks to Kevin for the last 2 years of his chairmanship.
On the announcement sheets, our next commission meeting is, of course, in 2 weeks.
Hey, Commissioner Kramer.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I'm not in charge. Yeah, Tony, you can read announcements. I love it. I've never liked the announcements.
I was going to let him roll there.
I should announce, though, that Tony does have the additional burden now of delivering the budget to the Appropriations Committee this afternoon.
This was one day too late.
Yeah.
Or too
early. We could have delayed this meeting the day and took you off.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you.
And wait a minute here. Where's that gavel, too?
Here. Oh, that's right.
It'll get as much use over there as it did over here.
No, it's part of my... deal to get the chairmanship. Brian's making me use this now. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, the 26th. We do have a few formal hearings coming up. Prior to that, on January 20th, Thursday, we will be in Kenmare to hear a pair of cases related to Enbridge pipeline upgrades. On January 24th, Monday, we will be in Rolla for a rescheduled hearing related to updates to the Border Winds 150-megawatt wind farm project. We have a couple of formal hearings after the next meeting as well that I won't talk about, but the other meeting that we have scheduled is a work session on Tuesday, January 25th, to discuss the MDU rate, electric rate increase application. With that, are there any questions?
Tuesday, January 25th? Oh.
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
Okay, I see it now.
Yep.
Could you just clarify more for me the role of the informal? What is the informal conference?
The informal conference is the public's opportunity. First of all, some member of the public or some entity would request it. They have the 30 days after the last notice publication to request an informal conference. If somebody does that, then that informal conference would be scheduled and would be held. That informal conference could be requested to be held actually in the community or in a community other than here in the hearing room. I would anticipate that may be the case. And whether it is or it isn't, I think it's probably a good idea to hold that informal conference in the community most affected near the proposed mine site. That informal conference then would be presided over, in all likelihood, in at least given tradition, by an administrative law judge or somebody other than the Public Service Commission. That is the public's opportunity to provide information, concerns, objections, findings, none of which, by the way, is evidenced by virtue of their presenting it at this informal conference. And that's where it's different than other citing cases where the commission would go out and actually have the citing hearing, evidentiary hearing in the community. It is then after that process, after that informal conference, that the presiding officer and reclamation staff takes whatever information was presented that they feel is relevant or important and brings to the commission then its findings and its recommendation. The commission then acts on either affirms or, I suppose, declines or denies that recommendation.
Can you have contact with the reclamation staff while this is going on?
That's a good question. I suspect probably not.
I'm sorry, Jim, did you say something?
Is that accurate, Jim? I mean...
That's never come up as a question what contact the staff can have with the commission during the whole process.
When's the last time we did one of these anyway?
Well, we, you know, the interestingly, the West mine permit, the Coteau mine permit that we had an earlier motion on relating to the federal tract was the last sort of, I would consider it, I guess, a greenfield new permit. It was a 17,000-acre permit application. And this, the process there did, in fact, lead to an appeal, as you might remember. And then we had, you know, rather colorful public hearing here in the Capitol.
But essentially, this informal conference is going. When you were talking about how the commission couldn't be involved in it,
we cannot attend it.
Okay, but you can hire an ALJ to preside.
Yes.
Okay, it's not like you're completely divorced from it.
Right. Because at the end of the day, that's right. The ALJ will compile the findings and make a recommendation along with reclamation staff to the commission. It is that recommendation that the commission will use to determine whether the permit should be granted or denied.
Is that the only public input chance that people would have, is this informal conference?
Until a permit is granted, after which they can then appeal that decision, and then there would be a formal hearing in front of the commission.
Okay, so the process here is that, okay, presuming that you hire an ALJ to do this?
Yes.
You hire an ALJ, the ALJ has an informal conference with the reclamation staff in attendance.
Yes.
And people.
And
people show up and say as they will, and then the ALJ makes a recommendation. Is that what happens?
Along with the reclamation, yes, along with the staff, they would make it.
And then you decide what to do with the recommendation.
That's correct.
And at that point, if someone is dissatisfied, they can appeal.
Yes.
And then what happens is, does it go to court then, or does it go to the commission?
No, the first appeal is to the commission itself, and we would hold then a formal hearing with, with the appellant, the appellee, and. And then after that, of course, then they have all the other normal routes and possibilities of appeal to courts.
So after that, we'd issue a final decision, and then that decision could be appealed to court.
Is it fairly certain that there's going to be an informal conference?
I would bet just about anything anybody'd want to bet on it that I would have,
And what is does it have to be held within a particular amount of time?
I don't know that answer.
It's not a set time.
Okay, and the comment period starts running when?
It'll start when South Arcole begins publishing the notice in the newspaper.
30 days which is after the last publishing, right?
Yeah. So it's 4 consecutive weeks.
Okay, so they publish for 4 consecutive weeks, and then there's 30 days after the last publication?
That's right.
And that 30 days is for the whoever would like to ask for an informal conference?
That's correct.
Okay. And then the informal conference can be held when?
I guess I'm assuming we're going to be sooner than say 30 days after the close of that comment period to give ample notice for that. So
I was just wondering, is there time pressure here? Does the company want to get rolling? I mean, do they want to have this process completed as soon as possible? Or I mean, what I was thinking of is. Is this something that is going to wait until the spring or the summer, or is it going to be sooner than that?
I'm sure the informal conference won't happen until spring.
Okay. Is there any time frame once the informal conference is held that something has to be, that a decision has to be made?
A decision with regard to?
A recommendation.
The issues at the informal conference, the hearing also would need to come up with a recommended order within 30 days.
Okay. So once the informal conference is held, the hearing officer has 30 days to compile things?
But there have been situations in the past where the informal conference has been continued to give the applicant time to address something, and that's entirely possible in this situation. Then reconvene that informal conference at a later date after the applicant's going to the situation. So there's different things that could play out.
So So essentially, it doesn't necessarily have to be 30 days after the informal conference that something that there is a recommendation made. Okay. Is that the nomenclature or ruling on the application? And the ruling would be grant it or don't grant it? Okay. Okay.
Decision on the application, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's a recommendation. Is that a recommendation to the commission, or is it a recommendation in and of itself? I mean, is it something a commission has to act on?
Yes, the commission has to act on the application either to approve or deny.
Okay.
It's pretty much like any ALJ. Whenever we use substantive ALJs for any case, while the ALJ makes the decision, it really is a recommendation to the commission and isn't final until the commission votes on it.
So basically it's ALJ, then a report saying either this should be granted or it should not be granted, and that is something that you act on, and that is the appealable.
And then order. After that, it's, appealable.
Okay. Is there anything unusual about this application?
No, I mean, it seems, I only can remember, the only other one I've been a part of is, of course, the West Mine at Coteau. If you say unusual or interesting thing about this, of course, relates to Tony's earlier motion and the IGCC facility. That's, that's a little different, obviously, but related.
Because when I looked through the files, it seemed like you had a number of things that you wanted them to do in terms of making sure the application was complete, but these seemed like typos or minor things. Is that a fair?
There was no major deficiencies in the application.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I think it should be. I think to illustrate that, I mean, this was an application that was received in last spring. And here we are deeming it complete, 8 or 9 months later. So that's
well, when I said typos, I mean, there's one, well, your legal description is wrong and your web link doesn't work and that sort of thing. It just didn't seem there was anything really that major. Is that a correct analysis?
Yeah, there were some details from the operations plan we didn't have. When there was some information that I remember specifically about particular water supply that wasn't.
And there's a
major component of the application.
Okay, and there was a question about a bridge and whether or not it was going to stay there. And I mean, this is, as I understand, the plant, the electric plant. Uh-huh. They're going to essentially manufacture hydrogen to manufacture electricity, and that's. What do you think about that?
Right. Well, the other aspect of it that we didn't touch on was that the plant intends to capture approximately 90% of the carbon content of the coal that's used in the production, and then take that CO2 via pipeline for enhanced oil recovery in the Williston Basin. Projects like this are things that have been talked about for some time. Certainly something that is, if it's not cutting edge, it's on the leading edge of where portions of the electric industry are going. So it's I think an indication of where we're at in the energy industry that companies are looking at newer and innovative ways to produce electricity, and this is one of those types of projects.
And probably as important as anything, newer and innovative ways to generate electricity using an abundant resource like lignite coal, and we're grateful for that type of technology. Of course, the one of the bigger challenges of this project is its proximity to the national park. But that's why, if you remember the history of this project, it started out as a traditional coal combustion plant, and of course by making these adjustments and now, as you point out, turning into synthetic gas hydrogen and generating electricity, certainly shortened the profile of the physical plant, changed the emissions dramatically, and of course, as Tony said, capture 90% of the CO2, all of which adds value, I think.
Also, isn't there, since this project was initially
proposed.
Made public or proposed, there's they can sell their power. I mean, they're going to have no problem selling their power, but I imagine because of the oil industry development.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's certainly a growing demand for the electricity itself, and I think as the economy grows in our region and improves in our export markets, that demand will only increase. And
remember, there are lots of ways to market power. It can be done through a traditional utility company if there's an agreement with a company that needs the power, or companies that are willing to take the power. It can be done on more of a merchant basis where they sell into the market. So there are a lot of moving parts here. I mean, it's interesting how many portions of North Dakota's energy industry this one project entails. I mean, you've got a lignite mine, so you're dealing with coal. It has attributes of pipelines in that the CO2 byproduct is intended to be shipped via pipeline into the oil fields, which is another source of energy. And then it impacts electricity and probably potentially some transmission upgrades that may be needed, or at least connections to the transmission grid.
Is there any particular regulatory scrutiny that comes into play here because this is being used to manufacture hydrogen?
I don't know that there is. I don't know why. Not for us, there isn't.
It's converting it into something else.
The ERC does a lot of research up there. I don't think there's anything special that goes into that. But we can follow up on that.
Yeah. I mean, either way, the plant's cited. So.
Mm-hmm. Does the idea of the carbon dioxide pipeline, does that bother you, given the fact that Basin has temporarily shelled their project at the power plant?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we have cited CO2 pipelines in the past. I think from a pipeline standpoint, that doesn't give any extra concern that you wouldn't have with any other pipeline or other cases that we've had. To me, the Basin project that has been put on ice is it's a separate issue. It's a different technology. It's looking at the particular market characteristics that they had. So I don't know that one impacts the other. Really.
Cost to implement when Basin's press released the cost of it without the technology in the backside.
And that's right. And I think that one of the things that this process illustrates, and probably the transformation of this process illustrates, is that it is. The carbon stream in a gasification or in this process of hydrogen generation is easier to capture CO2 from than the traditional coal combustion. So, you know, I think the CO2 piece is obviously part of what's drives this transformation, as well as, of course, the stacks and the visual profile, if you will, and its proximity to the national park.
If I could back up just for a moment to the coal permit application. Just so that I'm clear, what we have now is a completed application. Now it's published the notice for 4 consecutive weeks. Then you have an informal conference within 30 days after that. Am I right?
Well, potentially.
Yeah.
At the same time, staff will conduct a detailed review of the application. Too.
But the next step here is the publication of the notice. And is that right?
By the applicant. It opens the public comment period.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So, since we have a completed application, they publish the notice, and they have a public. This is the start of the public comment period, and also people can ask for the informal conference, which would be held after the publication is finished, sometime.
At the end of that public comment.
Right.
After that closes.
When does the public comment period close?
It's probably going to be around the middle of March. I guess it's going to be based on when Sulfur starts publishing that notice in the newspaper. That's probably not going to happen until another week and a half.
So. I guess the question I have is, to what extent does the public comment period extend after the publication of the last notice?
30 days.
Okay. 30 days after publication of the last notice, and we talk about approximately a month to publish the necessary notices. Am I right?
It has to be published once a week or 4 weeks.
So. Okay.
So, as practically speaking, we're looking at toward the end of March, and that's fine because Jim alluded to the technical review. The staff will now engage in a very intense technical review of the application, which also has to be completed by the end of March, I guess.
And the public comment period begins after the last newspaper publication.
30-day clock starts then.
The 30-day clock.
Comment period starts right away.
Once there's notice given at the application, basically the public comment period starts basically now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the 30-day clock starts after the last publication. And then after that, there is, and during that 30 days, or, I mean, when can you ask for an informal conference if you're a member of the public interested in that?
Anytime during that.
Okay. Okay. Anytime.
Well, you certainly don't have to wait till the last notice.
No.
Anytime from now until whenever. Okay.
Probably
middle of March. All right.
If we receive a request this afternoon for an informal conference, it'll be considered, I would think, a legitimate request, huh, Jim? Yeah.
But in terms of when an informal conference, as a practical matter, is going to be held, it be in this in April, May.
Yeah. At this point, don't know, but it won't be held any sooner than the end of that comment period, which would be mid-March.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right.
Anything else?
Are you going to be able to be the chairperson of the Public Service Commission and also, you know, gallivant around the country?
Withstand the pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if North Dakota is unique in this, but the position of chairman in North Dakota is probably a little different than in many other states because we operate on a portfolio system. In North Dakota, the chair is really first among equals, gets to do his or her portfolio first, calls the meetings to order, things like that. But as far as motions go and putting together orders and things like that, it's all in the portfolios themselves. Why I say that's different than many commissions is many commissions, the chair actually does make all of the motions him or herself, so there's a significantly greater workload that goes with the chairmanship's post. There's really not that much more work that goes on with being chair here in North Dakota, so it doesn't add any challenges that I wouldn't otherwise face.
I guess what I was getting at was, I imagine you'll be doing some traveling.
Oh, yeah.
Are there going to be instances where the chairman is going to be on the telephone?
Oh, there may be, but we've had that in the past, too. And in those cases, either... you know, they're simple enough proceedings where you can handle it over the phone or you just ask one of my fellow commissioners to pitch in. So, I mean, I think it's all very manageable.
And we would agree. Or I would agree.
You just voted for him because he said he used the gavel.
The gavel.
Whatever it takes.
All right, is there anything else? Hearing none, we will be in recess for, say, 5 minutes and then come back for Bill's adjournment.
Oh,